Kia ora, I'm Tuari Dawson, and you're listening to the Invisible Sensei podcast. Hey, kia ora, welcome to the Invisible Sensei podcast. Happy New Year. This is my first podcast for the year 2024. So this is it. This is what we're going with. This is how we're going to do it. I want to also start out by saying a big thank you and shout out to Robbie Gant, to my sister Benita over there in Chicago, to Andy, and to a whole bunch of other people that reached out with Christmas wishes over the holiday period, which I really appreciated. And all of those people have been really wonderfully positive and in some way inspired my conversation today. So I've been back from Okinawa, I guess just over a month now. Yeah, must just be over a month. And I've really had to take time to think about how do I kind of put things in some kind of logical order, or at least in a framework that I can articulate to other people. The listeners of this podcast, you guys, were really, really supportive of me going, and many of you contributed, I mean, financially, and I am hugely appreciative of that. So I wanted to take some time and make sure that I do it some justice. So in the next few podcasts, what I'm going to do is attempt to make them perhaps a little bit longer and try and give you a little bit of my own view on how it went. I'm also going to present an interview that I'm going to do with Josh Simmers Sensei of the Okinawa Karate podcast, my bro who I spent a lot of time hanging out with and staying with whilst I was in Okinawa, and with Sensei James Pankovich of the Asato Dojo, who the three of us were kind of doing a whole bunch of things and attending stuff, and it was awesome. And what I'm going to also do is try to interview some of those sensei that I was privileged enough to meet and train with, and see where that goes. But look, what I want to talk about today is, I suppose, the sum total of my knowledge on Okinawa, which is not extensive. It's not extensive because I think that on some level I've assumed, because I do karate, because I practice Okinawan karate and Kobudo and so on, that intrinsically gives me some kind of knowledge about the history. And I think it's unconscious. I think that there's also a transactional element to that, in the sense that I just want to learn karate, I want to practice karate. And, you know, when you find something you're passionate about, you know, you want to find ways and means of pursuing that thing. Now, my journey to Okinawa was a little bit different, in the sense that I'd been there before, but I'd been there under the auspices of other people, and I'm not there on my, how do I put this, I wasn't there representing myself, or at least being there as an individual person who practices karate as opposed to a dojo or a particular organization. So it was nice to do that this time. And what I was doing was also bringing something which I was a little bit reticent to do at the beginning, and that was to bring something of my culture, of traditional Māori culture. Now, you'll hear me talk about that quite a bit, and I'm in the works of creating some content for the YouTube channel, so you can see a little bit more about that, what that entails in terms of history, tradition, and technique, but that's a whole other thing. So I was going there with this idea of teaching the seminar. You know, James and Pankovic Sensei and I had talked quite a bit about it, and also Josh, and we're talking about how that was going to go and what that was going to look like, and I will post some stuff about that once I've had an opportunity to edit. And it was really about meeting of two cultures separated by distance, but I suppose connected by an ocean. Polynesian people, we are all connected by the Pacific Ocean. And I think that the fact that when I met Okinawan people, that they would also always refer, and I hope I'm getting this term correct, Umintu, or people of the water, which really accurately describes their relationship with the sea, but also, I guess, what my relationship and my people's relationship with the sea is. Now, for me, when I went, I was taking some weaponry stuff. I was taking a taiaha, pau whenua, some patu, and those are a couple of long clubs and some short clubs, and I was there with the intent of doing some seminars, but also more importantly to practice, listen, watch and see what happened. And I didn't have a huge plan in terms of wanting to go there and train with specific people or specific styles. What I wanted to do was go there, get a sense of, I guess, what we call in Māori the whenua or the land, because I guess for me, bringing my indigenous culture to their indigenous culture, I always had to remember, first and foremost, come from the place of being a good guest. And being a good guest means that, you know, you should at the very least, in some way, shape or form, present yourself, I want to say, or at least take time to get your feet in the land and learn from locals, not so that you become an expert, but just so that there is a respect implicit in the interaction. And what I learned about Okinawa can't be discussed or kind of captured in this single podcast, but I can give you my sense of, I don't want to say connection. I don't believe I'm connected to Okinawa in the sense that I don't think I've done enough time, or, you know, I don't have a connection, but it's certainly there's some kinship there in terms of the language and the culture. Going there and seeing the way in which karate was perceived originally in the 1900s as this kind of less than desirable martial art, or this kind of pugilistic style that only farmers did, or whoever, you know, all those sort of stereotypes, and people who did karate, when they were their big knuckles and so on and so forth, were kind of considered, at least in the people that I spoke to, it was kind of considered, is the word low class the one that I should use? But that's the feeling that I got. Or at least that they were a kind of a rough type. And that karate was something which was taught in families, I also got to learn a little bit. I didn't get to practice or train in it, to learn and meet practitioners of Motoburu, which, as I understand it, is in a really interesting style in the sense that it is not karate, it's something which existed before. So there was all these really interesting things going on, but what was also really evident to me was the fact that the reasons that people trained, and it was about self-protection, it was about having something to protect and something to preserve. And I was kind of asking myself, oh my gosh, you know, what are the parallels here? And I think the parallels were in the cultural values, first and foremost. That was the most, what's the word? I'm really struggling for words on this one. That was the most pronounced similarity, and that the desire to treat people as though they were your family members. And in Māori, we say ko au ko koe, ko koe ko au. You are me, and I am you, you are me, sort of thing. And it's really about looking after other people as though they were a member of your family, because at some point that might be returned to a member of your family. And I really saw that in full effect in Okinawa, in the dealings that I had with people and the way that they opened themselves to me, the kind of conversations we were having. It's really amazing. And a big shout out to Josh Simmer Sensei and his lovely wife, Mami, who really took time to sit with me and talk about their mummy's experience as an Okinawan growing up, and her family and some history from her perspective of the community and the island, and the islands. And then for Josh to take me out and spend time learning something of the history, you know, going to Hamahiga Island, and then also for James Pankovic Sensei being like a full-on historian. People like Dan Interson Sensei, who took a lot of time to sit down and just have these really in-depth conversations. And the many Okinawan sensei that I met that felt comfortable enough to share some of their story with me. I think that sometimes it's really, well, at least in me, it's really possible to forget that behind all this wonderful technique and secret genealogies and so on and so forth, that there is a culture and a history that is, you know, the place in which these beautiful traditions that we love so much come from. And one thing that I really enjoyed was in meeting people like Hanchi Patrick McCarthy of Koryuchinare, you know, the way in which he looked at the history of Okinawa and the way in which he had done so much incredible work around not just, I suppose, understanding karate, but understanding the wider cultural context. And then there was people like, oh my goodness, there were so many people. Ulf Carlson Sensei, who I've talked about a bit, and I'm hoping to get on the podcast, who would talk about, and he speak, they, you know, both of those gentlemen, they speak fluent Japanese. But also, with Ulf, he's talking about the history of his martial arts and the way in which it is taught, Kishimoto-de, and I had an opportunity for the month I was there to attend some fantastic sessions with him. But also there's a perspective on the culture and there's an embracing of certain elements of the way in which it's taught. And, you know, hanging out with James Pankovic Sensei and spending time there, going around the island, and you know, when you're on the Uchideshi program, honestly, all doors are open to you. And then I had some really great friends who contacted me whilst I was there, not the least of which was Hachi Cesar Bukowski of Northern Karate in Canada, who let me know, hey, look, if there's anything that you need, just holler, which was huge, to have these incredible people there to put it out there. But it seemed like that was not just them, but that was Okinawa culture, and I think it was just something really incredible. I really enjoyed it. Technique-wise, I think it comes down to the why of what you do as opposed to the what of what you do. And when I was training up there with, I feel like I'm doing a lot of name dropping, but I'm just going to do it because it's true, with the lovely Akimi Nix Sensei, wife of Sensei Ron Nix at their beautiful dojo, there were some wonderful conversations in which we're talking about the connection between odori, traditional dancing, and I guess the embu sen of karate, and how those things meet and inform each other. And everywhere I went, I was just made to feel so welcome. And it made me reflect a little bit on the importance of knowing who I am and where I come from. I also had, you know, Sensei Patrick McGale over there with me, who's been just a kind of a mentor in so many ways, there, who born and raised on Okinawa, and just sort of getting some of his thoughts and experiences. I mean, training at these dojo that, you know, you only sort of see in those old books, you know, these old wooden buildings with a sand, kind of a sand pit sort of outside where you can practice kobudo, and it was just really, really wonderful. And there was ample time for me to really think and discuss and talk and, I guess, have a thought about some of these things that I was experiencing. And I think that, how does it affect my karate? Well, I think that it gave me a greater appreciation for having a language and a culture and a martial culture, I guess, that is specific and peculiar to my own people. And I think I also got to a place of not really understanding for the years preceding this how little I spent time appreciating that. And I let the opinions of other people in history tell me that, you know, that was somehow substandard and so on and so forth. But I've come back with something renewed and feel very lucky to be able to do what I'm doing. You know, when we talk about karate, I think kind of the, you know, it's an emptiness of hand, you know, the empty hand and so on, but I think it's an empty mind as well, and an empty cup and all those metaphors, whatever metaphor you choose. I think it's about the way in which we choose to walk in the world. And I don't mean to get all airy-fairy, but I'm just going to say it. The thing that I really loved about the Okinawan sensei I met and the people, the sensei who are in Okinawa, was there seemed to be this real sense of it'll be all right, sweet as bro. It's going to sort itself out. You know, just have faith, stay focused and be positive. But also there was this real intensity in terms of training hard, understanding what you were doing, but approaching it as though it were a lifestyle as opposed to sort of something to be conquered and wrestled to the ground and then in some way, shape or form subdued. I don't think that that's what I'm going to be doing with my karate anymore. I think that karate is going to be a really important building block in my life. And I loved meeting some of these incredible older sensei who just were machines. You know, some of them in the 80s and 90s. You know, like, Okinawa is a blue zone. And I'm not talking about, you know, these magical martial wizards, but I'm talking about men who, if they were the same age here in New Zealand and they were Polynesian or Māori, for the most part, well, we don't live that long. But the lifestyle, the sense of purpose, the ikigai, all of those sorts of things I really related to, especially in our old people here. And I think it's something worth striving for. Continuing to train is in a way that kind of makes sense to myself. Like I think I really approach it from a mentality of the past of kind of, right, I need to do this and I need to do that, and it has to look this way and it has to look that way, and I have to look a certain way. Now, I went over there with a bung knee, and nowhere near as fit as I was. Every 20 minutes someone was telling me how huge I was, which was always great for the for the self-esteem. People would come to see me rather than train with me and say, oh, they heard how tall and big and all this I was, and I was going, yeah, yep, I get it. I'm bigger than you. Which in itself was a challenge. But I think it's important to understand, for me anyway, moving forward, the kind of karate that I want to do. And what is Okinawan karate? Well, that's not for me to say. But what I can tell you is what my version of Okinawan karate is that it's about longevity. It's about continuing to practice. It's about creating routines. And it's about finding in my life something worth focusing on and doing that. And also having something which provides the impetus to train. I like getting up early in the morning and practicing. I like going up to the dojo and putting my gi on. And has my knee gotten miraculously better? No. But I met men and women over there who were training at such a high level, and that were by far and away superior to me in every sense of the word. Age, technique, a level, grade, style, so on and so forth. And so have a think about, if you learn anything from my experience, why you are training and how you are training. How often do we kind of get caught into the next best thing? How often do we get caught into the trap of becoming discouraged and not seeing what we're doing as valuable or that we're any good at it? You know, I hate that. That's really difficult to be around, to be totally honest. It's hard to kind of see yourself in this way in which, you know, you're just kind of blundering along. But sometimes that's what life is, you know. It's about consistency. It's about the million things you do, the million tiny things we do, rather than the four really huge, loud, proud and out there things. So, you know, this is my thought. This is just my initial salvo in terms of my time in Okinawa, and I'll do some more, as I've said. I hope you don't mind the longer format. I'm going to try and do more. I'm going to try and pepper at least one 20-minute version in a month. So usually I'm about 10, between 10 and 12. So yeah, and also I've got some great interviews lined up for this year. So keep an ear out for that. Anyway, guys, wherever you are, and I really appreciate you taking time to listen. And thanks so much. And continue to train. I don't have any funny, amusing catchphrase, but I just think continue to train. And whatever way, shape, or form you can do, and for God's sakes, don't compare yourself to other people. Don't compare yourself in an unfavorable way. Be inspired by, but don't compare yourself to. That's maybe my mantra for the next year. So thanks for listening. Take care, and we'll catch up with you real soon. Have a great holiday season, and all the best for 2024.